Welcome to The Protagonistas, a podcast that is centered on highlighting the stories and experiences of Black, Indigenous, and other women of color among communities of faith. Our conversations sit at the intersection of race, gender, sexuality, and spirituality. I'm your host, Kat Armas.
Hola, 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 friends. Hope you are doing well. It's been a busy few weeks for me with several virtual speaking engagements and several days of recording my audiobook for Sacred Belonging, which was so fun and so exhausting. But I am so happy and so grateful that if you choose to listen to the audiobook, you'll hear me reading it, which might feel like a way more personal experience. At least I hope so. Anyway, before I continue, I do want to say welcome to the protagonistas. I've been thinking a lot lately about wisdom. If you read my first book, Abuelita Faith, you know this isn't new, as wisdom is at the heart of an Abuelita theology. But I also have a whole section on wisdom in my upcoming book where I talk about the wisdom of the stars, the moon, the wisdom of children, the wisdom we receive about our bodies and about the world when we follow the cycles of the seasons and the cycle of non-linear time. When researching these things, as you might imagine, I turn to non-Western sources that have been looking to the natural world for wisdom since the very beginning of time. And yes, this includes biblical sources from the time of the Israelites and Jewish tradition. I think it's important to point this out, that many Western Christians have often demonized alternate forms of wisdom, but what's interesting is that these kinds of wisdom are in fact biblical. Spiritually speaking, they're how our biblical ancestors lived and made meaning of their existence. For example, okay, I love essential oils, I do. I use them for all sorts of things. But I remember years ago, when they became popular, they were huge among Christian women in particular, who trusted in these herbal concoctions as healing properties to uplift moods and relieve stress and help with sleep and provide physical and mental healing, which I believe they do. But what's notable is that these potions, because technically that's what they are, date back 5,000 years, originating in ancient Egypt. Here's the thing. Healing remedies through herbal medicine were part of spiritual practices in the ancient world and were foundational to popular spirituality. People dabbed and inhaled herbs for calming and healing effects, not very different from how essential oils are used today. And this was deeply spiritual. In fact, in the famous Exodus story, the midwives who saved the baby Moses' life are often preached about as righteous, and the Bible even says they're God-fearing, right? But what a lot of folks don't know is that as midwives in the ancient world, they would have been considered spiritual healers, and a huge part of that practice was creating potions out of herbal medicines as healing agents for infants and their mothers, not just for physical healing though, for spiritual healing as well. Now, these kinds of practices continued throughout the millennia and spread to the Americas during the colonial period through the millions of African peoples who were enslaved by Spain in accordance with the Spanish Church. Part of European colonization involved the attempt to tame and even exterminate these spiritual practices in order to replace them with a more civilized, Western one, namely Christianity. It's no surprise then that the history of the church since then, and particularly modern Western evangelicalism, has not only rejected popular forms of native spirituality and their embodied wisdom, but has also regarded them as demonic. But what can be said about Western Christianity, friends, when it adapts a key part of these spiritual traditions and alternate forms of wisdom, i.e. essential oils, while simultaneously demonizing the very culture, people, and expressions of faith it comes from? So this is why I think it's important to investigate, to ask ourselves exactly, what is wisdom? What is knowledge? But most importantly, who gets to say? As I've mentioned, Western culture has long made the rules about what is knowledge and what is not, who is wise and who is not. Western dominating culture has positioned itself as the possessor and teacher of knowledge, which has resulted in the marginalizing or silencing of anyone outside of its bounds. One of my favorite post-colonial thinkers, who you may have heard of, Boaventura de Sousa Santos, argues that social justice in our world is not possible without cognitive justice, without the ability to recognize the different ways of knowing by which people across the globe live and make meaning of their existence. And I just love this idea of cognitive justice. I believe that in order to pursue cognitive justice, we must recover the diversity of ways of being and knowing in the world, the myriad of ways that people possess a wisdom that doesn't just live in their minds, but in their bodies, and in the natural world too. Robin Wall Kimmer, a botanist and member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation, explains that in indigenous ways of knowing, to know a thing doesn't mean to know something just intellectually, but to know it intuitively. To really know something, you must know it emotionally and spiritually. This makes me think of how one of the Hebrew words for know is yada, and it's often used in scripture to refer to sexual experiences. This tells me that knowing is not necessarily something you learn or a transferring of data, but something you intimately experience, an experience that is had. Now, this might make many Western thinkers uncomfortable because we've always believed that truth is static, right? It's fixed, it's unchanging. But for non-Western peoples, the notion of truth is dynamic. It unfolds over time. While it is rooted somewhere, it also develops. Truth is something we learn more of, something we experience as we move through this life. Wisdom, then, and knowledge and truth to our ancestors and beyond is always in the process of becoming. And this is just like us and just like God. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I'm sure many of you have heard the name God gives God's self, right? I am. I am who I am, God tells Moses at the burning bush. Now, this is a powerful phrase that has been used to describe a God who, among many other things, is unchanging. But a closer look at the text might shift our perspective a bit, or our perception of what God is like. You see, the word translated as I am is a continuous active verb. And because there is no present tense of the root word to be in Hebrew, the future tense is often substituted. This means that the phrase, I am who I am, can also, or probably better, as I argue, be translated as, I will be what I will be. I will become what I choose to become. I am becoming, which will be becoming. While God has often been portrayed as fixed and static, the Hebrew implies something seemingly different. It suggests a God who is dynamic, a God who becomes. Now, this is important for us as people made in the divine image. In this way, friends, I think we are given permission to shift and to change and to grow. We are invited to enter into a sacred and ongoing process of evolving, of becoming, just as God becomes. Friends, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Protagonistas. Be sure to leave a review if you haven't already, and stay tuned for more interviews coming up. And if you haven't pre-ordered Sacred Belonging, you are able to do so now at your favorite bookstore. Thanks again, and talk soon.